Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Goddess Alive Radio, and happy, happy Tuesday. It's kind of nice to be sitting here on a Tuesday evening instead of a Thursday, especially the day after the full moon. My name is Kimberly Moore, and I am the founder of Mother House of the Goddess, your humble host of this evening, with some fantastically inspirational guests. I'm going to bring Vicki Noble and Miriam Robbins-Dexter on in just a moment. Just for a little bit of housekeeping, we've got some really fantastic things happening at Mystery School of the Goddess. I just want to remind everybody to pop on over there. Molly Reamer has a wonderful new resource for wisdom. Check it out. And, of course, we have Normandy Ellis is doing the marvelous Feats of Light series. And Renee Starr has her Magic of the Goddess going on. Lots of really good stuff. Steve Lolly with the Read and Read. So, you know, pop on over and see if there's something good. I'm sure you're going to find something. I know it, I know it. MysteryschoolOfTheGoddess.net is the course listed. And survey out right now as well. As for future plans, so don't be shy. Click on the About page and fill it out for me. Let's see what else wonderful is going on. Well, of course, we just got done the full moon. And for those of you that are not signed up for the Goddess Full Moon Group or our wonderful New Moon Live Rituals with Lara Amazzoni, please check out MotherHouseOfTheGoddess.com, and you can get links to both of those. So every month we have a New Moon Live Video Ritual with Lara, and a Goddess Full Moon group with myself and the priestess Brandi Ossett. So next month we have coming up for New Moon, March 7th, is Durga with Lara. Now that is not anything you want to miss. Let me tell you, it's amazing. It's going to be amazing. And Brandi and I on March 22nd will be doing Kore. So the maiden Persephone as she comes out of the underworld for our spring. And don't forget, New Moon and Full Moon in March are both eclipses. So we are entering the eclipse season, as our astrologer said to us. Yesterday's full moon was probably the calmest full moon we might have for a little bit. So, you know, buckle up. Kind of like, you know, Mercury retrograde plus sometimes in eclipse season. So hang in there and stay tuned to all of the wonderful astrology updates we'll be putting out. Okay. Hurrah! Little bits of housekeeping. So tonight, I am really, 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 really thrilled because we have Vicki Noble and Miriam Robbins-Dexter with us. And we're going to be talking about their new book, which I have right here next to me, Four Mothers of the Women's Spirituality Movement, Elders and Visionaries. And I just want to encourage all of our listeners, get your hands on this book. If you value the roots of where feminist spirituality, women's spirituality, and goddess spirituality have come from, you don't want to miss this book. In the past 2 weeks, I've been leisurely kind of, you know, reading through, and it's kind of one of those books that's an anthology with so many familiar writings and familiar names, and you can just kind of pick it up, read a chapter, cry a little bit, because I did lots in good ways. And some of them are just so poignant. But these are our roots. This is where we came from. These are the women that have carved the path and the way and planted our roots so firmly so that we could flower and grow in our present times. And it's truly an honor to have Vicki and Miriam here. Vicki Noble, for most of you, if you like tarot and everything, you know, especially will know Mother Peace Tarot. I mean, I think we all have it. Don't we all have it? We should have it. All have it, I think. And certainly many of her books. And she has been an artist and an author and a healer for many, many years, and as well as a foremother of the women's spirituality movement. So, and Miriam Robbins-Dexter, I'm going to bring up all of our links. And by the way, the bios and links and everything to the book are on Mother House of the Goddess as well as on the Blog Talk Radio promotion.
And Miriam holds a PhD in ancient Indo-European languages, archaeology, and comparative mythology. And one of her books is Whence the Goddesses, a source book, and also more recently, Sacred Display, Divine and Magical Female Figures of Eurasia. And so we're going to have these two marvelous women join us right now. So let me unmute them. Miriam, Vicky, welcome. Are you there?
Yeah, this
we're
is
here.
Vicky. Hi.
Hi, this is Miriam.
Hi. Oh, it's so good because your voices are kind of different, so it'll be nice and easy for everybody. So, well, welcome, and thank you so much for being here. I really am very honored. I know our audience is, you know, very excited about this book and about having you here and listening tonight. So thank you for being
here.
Yeah,
thank
you.
We're thrilled.
Marvelous. This is an amazing book. How much fun was it?
Well, we always have fun, Miriam and I.
We do. No,
put our minds together and try to do a project. So it was especially enjoyable. Well, it was especially enjoyable for me, Vicky, because Miriam actually did all the work.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, lots of editing, but for both of us, it was quite wonderful working with all the authors, with all these just amazing women.
Yeah, sure
just
was.
Truly wonderful human beings.
Oh, you... Well, you certainly have the who's who of the four mothers in the book.
Mm-hmm. We do.
It's really beautiful. And, you know, for someone like me, who probably 23 years ago, I picked up one of Carol Christ's books for the very first time. So that was like one of my, you know, harbingers of my path and as a priestess. So to read this now... I mean, I'm telling you, I cried in good ways so many times in reading some of these articles in the book. So
that's wonderful.
What's
going to
be the emphasis for
doing
this now?
Lee, I can't.
I'm having trouble hearing you.
Yeah, I can't hear you at all just now.
Uh-oh. Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. All right, let's see here. It might be, you know, technology is great when it works. Okay, so this
is
it.
It is, yes.
So what was the impetus for putting this book out now?
Well, the impetus, this is Miriam, the impetus was that my publisher said she wanted to do another book with me. And what she really had wanted at the time was the Cambria Book of Goddesses. And Patricia Monahan had, in the couple of years before we started doing this, produced a wonderful trilogy of articles on three books on articles about goddesses with ABC Clio. And it was too soon to replicate that. So Vicky and I talked, and we came up with, well, what we really want to do is women's spirituality, because nobody has done anything about the four mothers for a very, very long time. And so we just started meeting and thinking together, and this sort of was born out of the two of us. Just,
yeah.
I think just mutually.
It was wonderful.
At the same time.
Of an invitation, you know, so often. I mean, Miriam and I have been meeting with Laura Amazzone for several years working on a book.
Yeah.
It's a very wonderful, exciting project, but it's not like anyone is waiting for it. We just were inspired and wanted to work together, and so we've been doing that. And when this invitation came to Miriam and she invited me to work on the book with her, it was just so nice to know that there was a structure, you know, a real publisher waiting and certain guidelines, and we followed those guidelines and invited others and had to produce it on their schedule. And as I say, Miriam really shouldered very much of the work, and I appreciate
which was decided at the beginning.
Yeah.
It wasn't that I reluctantly took it on. It was that I was asked to do the copy editing as well as the editing so that we could keep the price down, and we decided that I could do that.
Wonderful.
And so we live in different places, and we love the opportunity to get together, and this became a real reason to have periodic meetings and work on something that we love.
Well, the love shines through. It shines through, for sure. How long did it take to get it all together?
What was that?
Oh, I'm sorry. How long did it take to get it all together?
Oh, about 2 years, right, Miriam?
About 2 years, two and a half. We were ahead of schedule, which is what I wanted. I'd much rather be ahead than behind.
Right?
And what we really wanted, I mean, what we talked about and hoped for and really wanted was to get back the feeling of that time, you know, it was such a, like I wrote about in my introduction, it was a real uprising of women who, some of whom were had been in the civil rights movement, some had been in the feminist movement already in various ways, some were back to the land people, you know, there were different strands, threads.
And
but,
some of us were just writing about the goddess.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of isolation,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
We wanted to somehow remember and sort of resurrect that the energy, the shakti of that time, and the amazing kind of eruption that the women's spirituality movement was before we knew we were a movement. And
right.
I think the book kind of does that. You know, I think it does.
Yeah.
When the essays came to us and we were at the end where we actually put them out on Miriam's floor and started to put the order together, it was so nice because I felt like having read all of them, it seemed like a kind of a puzzle, and that the puzzle pieces were all different and that they were coming together in this wonderful whole. So
they came together so easily too, didn't
that's
they?
That's true. Yeah.
Oh, and it flows that way. I mean, it really
mm-hmm.
does. It, you know, it really is, you know, something that you can easily read for quite a while, you know, or just pick up any time and kind of flip through it, which is, you know, that's a difficult thing to achieve, I think, sometimes in an anthology.
Uh-huh. Oh, good, because that was so much what we wanted. If I were writing a book about it, I would have wanted to say all those things, you know. And so to have each woman tell her story. We asked them from the beginning, the first letter we sent out, we asked them to please answer 4 questions. You'll have to help me remember the exact questions. But basically, they all wrote from the same script.
First, how they joined this movement, what was the impetus to work within the realm of women's spirituality, what were their works, and then what are they doing now, so that there was a chronological flow to each piece.
And we were very interested in the way that most of the women from that time period have continued, you know, for 40 years to basically focus in the same way. I mean, that became our lives.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It is. And sincerely, you are our roots. I mean, you know, I think for all of us now, you know, when we look at the books on our shelves, the books and the words and the ideas that help form us so much.
Oh,
you're
I'm
fading
you
in and out again.
Oh, no!
Yes. It's fine now, again.
Not fine.
Oh,
not
you
fine.
Know what's going on. Okay, is it back? Here we go.
Yes.
Now it's back again.
I know. You know what? I think I was waving my arms, and I kept hitting the mute button. Oh, no!
Oh, okay.
Oh, but you're gone again. Oh, you're gone again. We can't hear you.
I am. No, then that's not it. Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Now you're back.
Okay. Well, then that's not it. Let's see. I'm not sure what's happening. We'll just set the phone down. I'll try not to move. Okay. So our roots, yes. And, you know, so I think this is an extremely valuable book. Especially, you know, for some of the younger women that are in the movement today that maybe didn't have the benefit, you know, of like the politics of women's spirituality and some of the earlier anthologies, you know, that were...
Which were also quite wonderful.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So exciting. So will you each share some of your story for our readers or for our listeners?
Oh, sure.
Okay. What we ought to tell you first is that on March 23rd, Vicki and I will be traveling to Seattle to accept an award for the book. And the award is the Susan Koppelman Award for Best Edited Feminist Anthology. And it's quite mainstream feminism rather than just women's spirituality. And it makes me feel that women's spirituality is entering the mainstream. So we're pretty excited about that.
Well, congratulations, and that's amazing. That's so exciting. And I have to tell you, just very quickly, it's so interesting. There's been so much talk, you know, amongst the women that, like, I know and work with and everything. And we've really been trying to drill down on women's spirituality versus goddess spirituality. And we've been noticing how much interest there is, mainstream interest now, very much so.
Much more.
In the women's spirituality and moving into goddess spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so fantastic because it's so timely, I think.
Yeah, I hope that's wonderful. We definitely had in mind to reach out to younger women who probably don't know any of the history.
Yes, the whole point really is to inspire the next generations as they hear the stories of the early generation. To do this work, because we need people to keep doing this work.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So, Miriam, how about you go first and tell us a little bit about how you started, because you both have magnificent stories, and how it has kind of evolved through your life.
Okay, well, in the early 70s, I was writing a myth paper for a class in a doctoral program at UCLA, and I was writing it on Indo-European female figures, and I was very interested in who these female figures were, like who were the great goddesses in all the cultures of Greece and Rome and the Germanic cultures and so forth, and were they in origin Indo-European? And so my chair at the time and the person who was teaching that class, Jan Pouville, said, well, why don't you turn this into your doctoral dissertation? And I said, okay. And it was the first time I really enjoyed writing. I mean, I had such a good time. I took 3.5 years to write the dissertation because it was so much fun to do. And what I figured out was that all of these female figures, these great goddesses with real powers, had been in these cultures early on, earliest Neolithic, before the Indo-Europeans got there. And these weren't patriarchal cultures, as Maria Gimbutas has shown us in her archaeological writings. There was Old Europe, and Old Europe was a culture that was very matricentered, perhaps today's definition of matriarchal, with mother at the center and women's values, which would include gift values rather than people trying to use one another. At any rate, these cultures all had great goddesses, and the Indo-Europeans who got their, maybe to their various places maybe only 4,000 years ago, brought with them a very, very few goddesses who were all naturalistic phenomena, the dawn, the sun maiden, a river goddess, an earth goddess, and that was it. So it told us a whole lot more about old Europe. So this is what I was doing in the 70s, and I finished my dissertation in 78, and thanks to Maria, who had herself put on my doctoral committee, I presented my findings at her first international conference in 1979 in Dubrovnik, Yugoslavia. And then she had my article published in the Journal of Indo-European Studies, and I was off and running. So I published lots of articles during that decade, and then decided to write a book, which came out in 1990, and that was Whence the Goddesses. So I was doing this sort of obscure academic work for over a decade before I became barely mainstream. At any rate, Maria had decided to mentor me, and she kept doing that until her death, getting me invited to conferences and getting articles published and so forth. And what I found was my path just sort of spread out before me and took over without my ever consciously deciding what I wanted it to be. I thought I was going to go to UC Berkeley, where there was no Indo-European Studies program and no Maria Gimbutas, and I ended up, because of some personal choices, I ended up at UCLA, where there was an Indo-European Studies program and a Maria Gimbutas. And I feel like the goddess had placed me on my path whether I wanted to be there or not. And this has been, my life has been the work of the goddess.
It's amazing how that happens, isn't it?
It is, yes. It really is amazing and wonderful.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. And Miriam, would you say that you have, like, one particular goddess that you work with frequently, that you turn to, or?
Well, yes. I mean, I have a goddess who I consider my goddess, and that's Inanna. A great part of the reason is that she had so many functions and attributes. You know, I cannot position myself as an Athena or an Artemis or a Hera, because I think there's a lot of overlapping of function. And so for me, it's just that huge sacrality and power that I call upon.
Beautiful. Yeah, that's amazing. Wonderful. And Vicky, because you've got a really fun, very funky story. I love that there's kind of two sides of the coin here, you know, very much. The, you know, much more of the academic push on one side and kind of a very experiential push, but
yeah,
meeting in the middle always. It's beautiful.
And I think that's what attracted Vicky and me to work with each other, is we were so different and each had something that the other liked.
And needed.
And needed, yeah. For a whole.
Wow. Yes, yes.
Yes, so you're right. I came up from a very different angle. I was living in Colorado Springs in the 1970s, in the early 1970s, when I awakened to feminism, it was a really big thing for me. I've always said feminism is my religion. It was was like a spiritual awakening, even though it was just the women's liberation. And I threw myself into it wholeheartedly and helped to create a very strong women's health movement in Colorado Springs. We even opened a GYN clinic the year before I left. And I met Karen Vogel there when she came with a partner who was teaching anthropology at Colorado College, where I was getting a degree. And we got together and we decided to move to Berkeley with my kids and answer the burning question at the time, which was for us, what happened to female sexuality? We called our first essay The Repression of Female Sexuality, and our concept or our idea, our investigation was to figure out how that happened. And so in a way, the mother piece cards that came out of our collaboration are kind of a revisioning of world history, putting women back into it, you know, really answering the question, what happened and how is it that we have come to the point where we don't remember these amazing earlier parts of our human evolution that were matriarchal. So that's kind of been my quest forever. And as we were working on the mother piece, just like Miriam, you know, it was kind of obscure and we were kind of isolated in Berkeley. We didn't really at the beginning know anybody else, and we were just doing our obsessive project, and everyone thought it was quite strange when our research turned into an art project making the mother piece cards. But it was, for us, it was in the flow, you know. It was an unexpected turn of events, but when it happened, it felt just right. And we started to make these drawings every day, and we wanted to know what would a tarot deck look like if we put women back into it. And we used that as a form of, or it used us, I think, really, as a form of getting the matriarchal material out into the world in a form other than an essay. And then from that, and it was very magical, very blessed, you know. Somebody at Harper San Francisco saw a flyer for the cards when we printed the cards, and it said I was working on a book, and the managing editor at Harper wrote to me and said, we'd love to publish your book. And so they did. Never happened today. At that moment in time, and that's part of what I was really trying to bring back into focus, you know, is that the 70s, were really a kind of a watershed of some kind, you know, an amazing moment when a lot of different streams came together and an enormous amount of really raw creativity was expressed by women in many different ways. And we began to interact with the Berkeley women's communities, I should say, and to come to know other women. And, you know, by the time the cards came out, we were pretty plugged in. And I think the essays show that that was true for other women at the time as well. We found each other, you know, and we began to understand by the early 80s that we were a movement of women's spirituality or goddess spirituality, a new movement that... What was exciting for me and what I wrote about in the intro is that so many of us who had just been living, you know, pretty normal lives for out of the 1960s, I guess, I was not, you know, a radical. I was married to an Air Force officer before I divorced him and became a radical feminist. So, you know, it wasn't like coming out of... at least it wasn't like I was coming out of any movements or anything. I was pretty much on the periphery, and then it was just like an incredible awakening for me when I read a book. I read Kate Millett's Sexual Politics, and it just put everything in order for me. Everything I had ever felt and experienced, she articulated it, and I felt like I came home, you know. And so from that perspective, I wanted to, at this time in my life, I wanted to really interrogate those early choices and try to remember and bring to life the kind of radical changes that we made. What a transformative moment it was for so many of us. You know, we left husbands, mm-hmm. we left the church, we left organized religion, we left God, we left heterosexuality in some cases, we left the money-making culture. When Karen and I moved to Berkeley, our car broke down. We didn't even fix it. You know, we just lived on nothing. But it was a time when we could, and we lived very nicely on nothing. You know, a little bit of my child support, a little bit of her kind of allowance, and that was it, you know. And you couldn't do that today. So we were very blessed, and in that moment, I wanted to somehow bring that back, that moment of freedom, that the publisher would come to me, that the cards could be printed, you know, because we had a lucky break with a cheap house we bought in Berkeley with almost no money at all in the late 70s that turned into a cash cow for us when we were ready to print the cards, you know, because the housing market expanded at that moment. It was all fate. We laughed about it sometimes, that it was as if the little people in the cards were just trying to get in, you know, and they were using us to do that, to come into form.
It's just that's how amazing. I feel. I think it is fate.
Yeah.
Yeah. There is a sensation of being in that flow of Goddess looking directly at you and kind of nodding her head and then saying, buckle up, you know, here we go.
Yeah. Because are you going on a ride?
Oh, yes. And what a blessed world that is to be in. I mean, you know, to have those experiences. So, you know, that's very interesting because, you know, for me, looking at the time we are in now, and I'm 46 now, so I feel like some of that liberation and freedom is really settling back into the movement. Do you agree with that, or what do you think of our times now?
Wow.
Our times are mixed.
You know, for me, it's a shocking, different kind of time because it's so materialist and, you know, the universities have been taken over by corporate business models and it's
all of them.
It's so different, and everything costs so much, and people have to work so hard every day, all the time, month to month, you know, to make it. And that's so distracting in a way from the relaxation and the freedom and the excitement and the creativity of the 70s. And I guess that was part of the motive for us, you know. It's like, how can we remember this and understand it? Because it's only, 30, 35, in some cases 40 years, you know, from that time. But the backlash has been so effective. And we need, I think, to really raise ourselves up in some way as a movement again. But it's so much harder under these conditions. And yet we've been living inside of this other story now for 35 or 40 years. It's amazing. I hardly relate, you know, to the culture except when it gets really dire and I know I have to relate to electoral politics and so on just to keep it from getting worse. But otherwise, most of what goes on in the mainstream is of really not so much importance to me. My world is kind of constructed around these matriarchal principles and the principles of community and so on.
And the goddess is still very obviously guiding our paths.
Yes.
And making things happen. So there is that thread, and it's a very optimistic one.
It's as if we just really deep roots, you know, or we came up out of really deep roots, like, what is it called, the mycelium or something like that in the forest, you know, everything is linked together from this underground And I feel like we're kind of like that, you know. The goddess movement has manifested in many different ways, and we have grown roots, and it has gone out in powerful ways, you know, with these programs, graduate programs that we developed that went into two different universities. And, you know, that's amazing. But it's an uphill climb. It's got a different feel to it.
Now it really has a different feel to it. I was able to teach courses on the goddesses for 16 years at UCLA, and then the money ran out. And this isn't quite what the corporate politics of the universities are promoting at this time.
Boy, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And in the 90s, the corporations took over publishing, and many of us had, many of the authors in the book, and Miriam and I had all been published with not a great deal of difficulty. They were respected.
Oh, absolutely.
And they appreciated our work, and, you know, these days, that's just out of the picture. The corporations have a really... it's a backlash.
So it's really fascinating to me to hear this perspective from both of you. From my standpoint, I look at the opportunities now for self-publishing, the global opportunities to rally our community via technology, and really, I mean, move the goddess in ways that, you know, you were doing in a very grassroots, amazing way. And it's kind of a different grassroots. It's not as grassy. It's a little bit more technological, you know.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like, so for me, I feel a sense of that liberation and freedom to say, you know what, the big publishing houses can keep it. The books are still going to get published, and now even more of them can. And we can kind of be the queens of our own kingdoms to a certain extent and expand it as far as we can via technology and reaching out to women all over the world.
Well, that's wonderful. Yes, I've come to appreciate Facebook and how people contact me and, you know, how I stay in touch with them. I was really reluctant, as many of us at my age are, but it turns out to be kind of fun and an interesting way to stay in contact with people who are interested in the goddess and the work we do.
You're right.
But I certainly haven't done all the others, you know. My granddaughter put me on Instagram, but that was way last summer, and I can't remember how to.
Vicky, take pictures of your bees for us, please.
Okay, I will. I'll put pictures on Instagram, you think? Oh, I'll try. Okay, maybe my granddaughter will help.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I'll tell you, your book was on Instagram today. I put it on my Instagram for Mother House.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, so,
great.
You know, it's a different way, and I will share with both of you, like for Mystery School of the Goddess, which is our online platform, and now we have more than 15 instructors, and in 15 months there are more than 4,000 registered participants.
Oh,
that's wonderful.
So great.
And I have to tell you, I think Goddess is out there working it.
Just in a different way. I think you're right.
I always say and believe that the goddess is like an underground river, you know. A river can't be stopped. And every now and then, no matter what, it rises up. It comes up like a spring or whatever, you know. It comes up above the ground, and it continues to run. You're describing the next flow.
It is. Which is,
well, good, because what we were trying to do is pass on the torch.
Yes. and it will find its own way.
What was that?
It will find its own way, Miriam.
Oh, yes. Well, absolutely. Yeah. And I'm so happy for younger women who are taking it up. And last summer at the Glastonbury Festival, there were two young women who do yoga oh, I wish I, now I don't know the name, so I can't say it, but they're lovely, Vienna and Ashley, and they helped show me about Instagram and so on. And really, they showed me how they were communicating to the world, you know, about the goddess. And it's amazing. It's just, we're sort of not very good at it, really. Oh, well, I'm not. I shouldn't speak for Miriam. She's good at it.
Oh, I'm not. I don't know Instagram. I don't know Twitter. I got on Facebook because my publisher a couple of years ago asked me to get on and like Cambria Press, so I did. And then people started friending me. And the first one, I think, was Patricia Monahan, who was, it was like she was welcoming me into her house. Oh, Miriam, you're on Facebook. She was very good at that sort of thing. So I thought, wow, you know, it's a whole other way to keep contact with our friends and with the world. So I like Facebook, but I haven't learned anything else.
That reminds me, Patricia Monahan is one of the women who started the...
Yes.
Association for the Study of Women in Mythology, ASWIM. It's and they are having their every other year conference in Boston this spring. And Miriam and I have been invited to present the book at an evening plenary session Friday of the conference. And it's very exciting because we had some book events in Berkeley, and the West Coast authors mostly were able to show up, and a few others. And now we'll be on the East Coast debuting the book, and many of the authors are coming. Almost a dozen,
yes.
I think, with you and me. Is
I
that
think
right,
almost
Miriam?
A dozen.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. That's amazing. That's amazing.
We're very pleased. It's going to be such a perfect audience for us.
And for our listeners...
We should give a website. I'll put a plug in here.
Yeah, in Boston, womeninmyth.org, it's the Association for the Study of Women in Mythology. There is an ad on Mother House at the bottom. If anybody can't remember, just go there, click on it. It'll take you right to their website. And you're also doing the Matriarchal Studies Day.
Yes,
on Thursday,
I always
before the conference.
Cool.
Yeah.
With Lydia Rule, and this will be the third time we've done the Matriarchal Studies Day, sort of piggybacking it on the ASWIM conference. So that's Thursday, March 31st, and the conference itself is Friday and Saturday, April 1st and 2nd. And they're separate. You actually have to click on the Matriarchal Studies Day to register, but it's $60 for the day and the evening, and it's a full...
quite good.
It's great. I mean, we just make it pay for itself. And there's lunch included. And, you know, it should be wonderful. I mean, anybody who doesn't know about the International Matriarchal Studies movement should really check it out, because it's a very exciting movement where activists and scholars, all feminists, are coming together with living matriarchal people who are self-defined as matriarchal. You know, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, the anthropologists insisted that there had never been a living matriarchal culture, so you could never say, there weren't any living matriarchal cultures now, so you could not say that there ever had been. Sorry about that. And now we know that's not true. And so
there are,
and there always have been, and I think there are pockets, you know, remnants of what was once a worldwide way of, and so it's always the Matriarchal Studies Day is a smaller event than the international conferences that we have had, but it's still interesting. And for instance, I have a former student who did a master's with me at Sophia University in the Women's Spirituality Graduate Program, and she's presenting on a curriculum that we've developed that she presented in her high school class. She teaches high school kids, and she presented our curriculum. It's so exciting. She's going to report on it and other interesting things, you know.
So much good stuff. I mean, it's really exciting. And you're going to be, I wanted to just say, I'm kind of getting giggling a little bit. You're going to be in my home area. I'm from Delaware.
Really? Do you know about the Women's Days then?
Well, I saw it in your email because I'm actually in South Florida right now, and I'm planning on moving back home this year. I miss my Four Seasons. I miss my family. And Ann Key was the one who said to me, oh, yeah, we do association for the study of women mythology stuff in Lewis with Sid all the time. And I went, in Lewis, Delaware? What are you talking about? And then I see Women's Fest, and I'm going, I really need to go home. I do.
Yeah.
I'm going to teach Mother Peace at Women's Fest.
I love it. I'm going to send you my ladies that are in that area. I went home just over a year ago for the first time in 16 years. And a friend of mine, we found each other again on Facebook. We've been friends since when we were 8 years old. And turns out she's on a very spiritual path. There were other gorgeous women I got to meet when I went home. They're goddess women. It was so cool. It was a great confirmation to say, yep, time to go home. There's women here, that's so exciting. And Miriam, are you still in California as well?
I am. We're both, yeah, okay. Vicki and I are both in California.
Okay, good. Now, are you coming out for the Association for the Study of Women in Mythology conference?
Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely. Oh.
Good.
Yeah, it's going to be a wonderful event.
Oh, that's so fantastic. And I know, several of the authors, Ann Key's been keeping me up to date. So I was going to try and get up there, but I don't think I can this year. But I have too many balls in the air juggling at the moment. But how wonderful. Really, really cool. And can I ask you, both of you, feminism has become a word today that has had a very negative connotation attached to it, and I think a very purposefully negative connotation attached to it.
Yes, so program.
Exactly. Yes, very much so. You know, the whole angry, calm down, you're out of control kind of thing going on. And so how is it different? How are you looking at feminism in the 70s versus today? What are some of the differences that you're seeing both in the reaction to and in the movements themselves?
Okay. I taught in the Women's Studies program at UCLA for 16 years, and they this was the only women's spirituality that they allowed, and now not only is there not women's spirituality at UCLA, but the corporate structure didn't even allow the Women's Studies department to exist on its own, so they had to merge with several other departments. So there doesn't seem to be any money in feminism to support feminism. And this is a huge change. So women's studies went from a program that lasted a few decades to a department for a couple of years to not existing in its original form. So things are definitely changing in how feminism is supported by the outside world. It isn't so much right now.
And on a personal level, I do believe that there's been a kind of propaganda from the big media and the advertising. You know, the whole corporate structure is way powerful with all that money. Mm-hmm. And they put out all the messaging. And the messaging that the younger women seem to have received is that feminists were angry, radical, man-hating, unsexy, really fundamentally unsexy. And, and you know, we all laughed when this first started to happen and be the perception, because we know that we were so out of the box, it would be shocking if somebody would write about it, you know. And but instead, younger women have really been encouraged to believe that it's unattractive and passé to be a feminist. And so, you know, even though so many of them believe in all the same kinds of principles of freedom that we do, they categorize it in a different way. I mean, I can't speak for them. I'm speaking from observing, you know, and kind of being baffled by how this could be happening. Some of it, I think, is the way that the media and the advertising industry, through their psychological maneuvering, is able to convince young women that to keep all women separated. So mothers and daughters who would naturally be more aligned and closer in a sane society, mothers and daughters are really encouraged in a very strong way to be adverse. And so a lot of the programming around feminism seems to be things like, you know, these aren't your mother's genes, and, you know, those kind of things.
You're right. Very. Yeah. So you're really different from your mother.
Yeah, and kind of always mother down to the way psychology has always pretty much blamed the mother for everything. You know, I mean, psychology is wonderful in many ways, but the blaming the mother thing is pretty aggravating and kind of consistent. It seems to be consistent from generation to generation, and it's a
starting
terrible
with Freud.
Way of separating alignment of mothers and daughters, the natural allies that mothers and daughters really are.
Absolutely.
I mean, my mother is my ally. I am certainly an ally to my daughters, and they agree. So,
yeah,
you
that
know,
wasn't my experience.
That was not your...
I was very much allied with my mother, and my daughter is certainly my ally.
Good, wonderful.
And we're very much on the same wavelength. But I have always been on the periphery of things, and maybe I'm on the periphery of mothers and daughters having to be adversarial.
Well, I think it's a myth. I mean, I think
you're right.
Cultivated idea.
I will tell you in a very interesting way, because I am not allied with my mother, sadly, at all.
That is sad.
And it's something my whole life. However, the root of that also, too, is some very serious programming and misogynistic programming that occurred in her childhood and was passed in her reaction to me. You know? I was very lucky to have grandmothers, aunts, who were amazing, and a father who was amazing. So, you know, I think that what's interesting about it is that the programming that sometimes our mothers didn't recover from, maybe. And see, my mom would be a little bit older than you. Okay, so she's in her 70s now. So she didn't have the advantage of the 70s, you know what I mean? Back then, it was different, you know what I mean? So she missed the wave.
Yes.
And what I see is that like your generation and below, it does not seem as adversarial.
That's benefit of the movement.
Yes, exactly.
There is one voice of hope, and that is that the goddess spirituality movement seems to be a backlash against the backlash. That, you know, I think that goddess spirituality is the most radical form of feminism, because it's looking at the divine in a completely new way, because the mainstream really believes in a male divine. And look how many women are honoring the goddess these days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's exciting. So, and some of the most
exciting work, I think, is happening in within the traditional frameworks. I mean, I think women doing a reclamation of the divine feminine within Christianity and Judaism and Islam, you know, there's a movement that's really happening there.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's happening within and without traditional
mm-hmm.
religion. It's happening everywhere.
You know,
yeah.
there was, since you might be interested in this, Kimberly, just to read the book, there was a conference at Harvard in 2002 called Feminism and Religion. Anne Browdy is the woman, the dean there at the School of Religion, and she did this wonderful feminist conference where a number of religious leaders, I'm putting that sort of in quotes, but it was women religious leaders who came, and they asked us all to, Carol Christ was there and I was there. We were the only ones who were in the goddess thing. Everybody else was in pretty much inside of some of the organized religions, but it was quite diverse. And they everybody gave a 20-minute talk talking about using the structure of three transformative moments in our lives as feminists. Like, what made us feminists, and what were the three transformative moments? So instead of disagreeing with each other about our theories and beliefs, we just each told our personal story. And then it was put into a book that, unfortunately, they called Transforming the Faith of Our Fathers. So I don't know if anybody ever bought it.
Pretty masculine title.
Wow.
Almost nothing to do with what we were, well, I suppose, you know, in an overall sense, you could say from the perspective of the fathers, you know, that that's what we were doing, but it wasn't at all what we were talking about. But anyway, it's a wonderful book because it captures the different impressions and the different, these wonderful older feminist women, you know, who have become religious leaders in some way and are deconstructing whatever church or temple or synagogue or mosque that they're part of. It was quite wonderful.
That's amazing. I found it on Amazon. That's great. What did we do before Amazon? I don't know.
I don't know. I don't have a clue what I did.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, for me, it was really amazing, you know, being an avid reader, and I came down to South Florida, you know, at 23 and found this great shop, you know, a witch shop, Daughters of Isis. I mean, you know, and kind of walked in going, what? And this is where I'm supposed to be. And Woman Spirit Rising was one of the first books I bought there.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. So, you know, it's amazing, you know, how transformational all of these things are, you know. Mm-hmm. So let me ask you a question, too, because this is of great interest to me right now, is kind of, how do you define women's spirituality versus goddess spirituality, and do you think there is a difference?
Yes, I do at this point. I kind of wish we had, I don't mean to betray our purpose or whatever, but I kind of wish we had titled our book Goddess Movement.
I do too.
Because it would have been more clear, because the women's spiritual movement is really so diverse, and it involves so many different avenues of looking at the feminine divine, you know, so... I think that was an error on our part, and it's too bad because the book's in print and that's what it says. And so I do think reality is much larger, and it has grown and evolved and really is a big, big, big coalition of women doing their own interesting thing with the goddess, but maybe not even using that word.
Right. Well, Carol Christ wrote a really interesting article on the Feminism and Religion website a few weeks ago on using the term goddess spirituality rather than feminist spirituality and why it's so important to put goddess at the center. And I wish I'd read that before we named the book, because I totally agree with you.
I agree, too. Too bad. But anyway, so that was a little... It's too bad because it's hard to change something that's now in print.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's so interesting about it is that I had a really interesting conversation with a fantastic woman a few months ago who was looking to get a women's group together here and asked me for some resources and ideas and things. And what was so interesting to me is that she really felt like the term goddess spirituality or goddess spirituality group was religious, and that women's spirituality was more all-encompassing, and women, it didn't have to be about a religious idea. And
uh-huh.
I just thought that was so interesting because obviously I live in my goddess spirituality bubble, so I kind of went, really? Okay.
Yeah, I think I have always thought of women's spirituality as goddess spirituality.
Yeah.
But the naming makes a difference.
Yeah.
It does. It does. But what's so interesting, I think, too, is that when you're positioning women's groups and women's spirituality, I think almost inevitably it leads to goddess in some way.
Ah, well, mm-hmm. probably.
You know, yeah. Hopefully, you know, that's what I think, yeah.
Right.
You know, but as the, you know, like, as and the Red Tent Movement, which interestingly is considered to be more women's spirituality, and
uh-huh.
I kind of, like, laugh, and I say, well, that's kind of like, you know, goddess gateway stuff. Those are all rites of passage, you know.
Well, you know, the Tibetans, in their teachings, talk about outer, inner and secret teachings. And I have a feeling we're probably talking about something like that, you know, that it's all one big thing, but there are different audiences, different constituencies, you know, and each woman who's in any kind of leadership position is working with a certain constituency, you know, and you have to be true to your people. And it's,
yeah.
And in your sense, we're all in one big thing.
Yeah, yeah. We just need a secret handshake now, don't we?
Well, we're passing the torch on. You figure that out.
Yep.
I'm going to work on the secret handshake. I'll be in Rehoboth. This is so great. So... I know this is really, I had an author kind of chewed me out a little bit for this question after he had written a book, and I said to him, so what's next? He's like, look, he goes, you're a woman, I just birthed a baby, and now you're saying, don't you want another one? but what's next?
well
Miriam, really,
let the cat out of the bag about the book we're working on.
Sure.
Talk about
yeah.
it. Wait till you hear this. We have been working several years in a wonderfully, wonderful collaboration with Laura Amazzoni on a book about the Indus Valley. Have I lost you?
No.
Indus, old India, you know, before it was India. And
yeah. I mean, before it was India, Pakistan, and Afghanistan.
Yeah.
In the Neolithic.
And it's an exciting place for those of us who love history and prehistory and all of that. And so we're writing a book where we are saying that in the Indus Valley, we think there was a prototype of the goddess Durga. And we're putting together visual things and artifacts found by archaeologists and language script that has not been deciphered, but that many people have weighed in on, many scholars have weighed in on it. And we're playing from each of our areas of expertise, we're working on this interesting investigation, which we hope will be a book someday.
Yeah,
and
we really started doing it because of the synchronicity. Laura and Vicky came over for lunch one day, and we found we were all reading books about the Indus Valley. Now, how many people do you know at any one time who were doing that? And Vicky said, oh, I guess we have to write a book about this. And she was so right.
And it's just wonderful to work with women in collaboration when it's as seamless and holistic or something, you know, like we each have something really different to offer. And it's just been wonderful fun. And for me, it's a big excuse to go down to L.A. and visit my friends on a periodic.
Yeah, and the whole point. And the whole point is to have fun.
Yeah, which
That's
we do.
That's why we're doing it. And we sure do.
Oh, yeah. Well, I really look forward to that. it gets my goddess geek going totally. And believe me, Miriam, when you said Jan Kuvel, his comparative mythology book is one of my most well-worn books on my shelf.
Really? Oh, that's wonderful. Yes. Well, you know, he not only did comparative mythology, he taught me a number of the ancient languages that I studied in the graduate program when he was chair. When I joined the program in 1967, he was 31 years old and he worked with 31 languages. And I thought, okay, this is a role model for me.
Oh, that's amazing. Amazing.
Yeah, he's a pretty amazing person.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. It's one of my favorites.
That's amazing.
That's a true synchronicity that you would have read a book of his.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and carry it around like a teddy bear. Yeah, there are a couple books I do that with.
Wow.
Some of, Janine Cannon books as well. Like, there's a couple books that I'm very attached to, you know.
I'm attached to her work, too.
Yes. That's, you know, believe me, having Goddess Live Radio in Mother House has been so blessed in so many ways for me to be able to connect with women like you and Vicki and Janine and Carol and, you know, Louisa
Well, let me say goodbye to someone who has read our book. You know, it's really, these days, I think often interviewers don't read books because it's too much. There are too many.
They just want talking points.
And so it's really fun to talk with someone who's actually read our stuff.
Yes, we're very grateful to you.
Oh, yeah. Not nearly as grateful as I am to you. Truly, truly. And I will have to, offline, we'll have to discuss to a Four Mothers project that I would love for both of you possibly be involved in with Mother House. So we'll have to talk about that. It was kind of it's been something banging around for a little bit. And then when your book came out, I'm like going, look, they're all here in a book. You know, it was great.
Don't say all. There are many others, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, so many great contributions, honestly. Well, is there anything else you all would like to share? You know, Vicki, I certainly will, within our community, share your travel schedule and some of the cool events going on.
Great,
I'll share them in our social network. Miriam, are you going to be traveling, speaking anywhere besides
the two events we already talked about, which was the one where we're in Seattle where we're receiving the award at the American Culture Association, and then the Women in Myth Conference where we're doing East Coast book launch.
And how fun that it's in Boston. That's one of my favorite eating cities. So.
Oh, good.
Very good. Well, again, thank you so much to both of you for being here and for our roots and for nourishing them for all of these years. Thank you. And you continue to nourish them.
Thank you. It's amazing.
It's amazing.
And so, may we all do that in joy.
Mm-hmm. You definitely enjoy. There's no other way to do it. No other way to do it. For our listeners, MotherHouseOfTheGoddess.com has all of the links you need, including the one
that you're going to hit to buy the book and read it. And enjoy it and think into it, because these are important stories and roots for all of us that love Goddess and are seeking to grow the movement and the community that began so many years ago. So, again, ladies, thank you so much. Vicki Noble, Miriam Robbins-Dexter, for our listeners, just a reminder, because we've been talking for a while. I usually try to drop links in here and there, but thank you so much for being here on Goddess Live Radio.
Thank you, Kimberly. Many blessings to you.
Many blessings to you both as well. And I'm going to be looking on Instagram, Vicki, for your bees.
Okay.
And pictures from the conference. And I'll be searching.
Well, I'm on there, so you can follow me, I think is what they say. It's the language that makes me crazy sometimes.
Yeah.
Right? I will absolutely do that.
I'll try to put something on.
That would be great. It would be so cool. And the bees. Can we ask for anything better than that? Yeah.
All right, I'll do it.
All right.
Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
And good night to you both.
Bye.
And good night. Thank you, ladies.
Take care.
Good night to all of our listeners, and thank you. We will be back. I will be back Thursday night with Audrey Allison. Tune in, call in. You guys always love when she's here, and we appreciate you. Have a fantastic night, and thank you so much for being with us on this special Tuesday edition. Good night. Uh-uh.